I'd like to discuss the statute of limitations issue first. The Superior Court entered judgment against DuPont and in favor of Medtronic on the statute of limitations, and that was as to both claims filed by DuPont. To justify summary judgment on the statute of limitations, Medtronic has the burden of showing that there are no genuine issues of material fact as to three things. First, that the claims were not inherently unknowable. Second, that there's no genuine issue of material fact that there was a red flag that clearly and unmistakably would have put a reasonable person in DuPont's position on notice of the claims. And thirdly, that there are no genuine issues of material fact as to whether, even if DuPont were on inquiry notice, had it pursued investigations additional to the ones that it did pursue, that it would have led to the discovery of the facts constituting the basis for both claims. Now, the Superior Court acknowledged that this was an extensive and complicated record, and further acknowledged that its decisions were close calls. Unfortunately, the Superior Court committed errors, in particular in applying the summary judgment standard to the record insofar as it related to the statute of limitations. And in doing so, the Superior Court ignored evidence favoring DuPont, or construed inferences in favor of Medtronic rather than DuPont, misunderstood the import of certain documents and testimony, and made some credibility determinations that should have been the province of the jury. The summary judgment on the statute of limitations should be overturned, I submit, Your Honors, because there are numerous genuine issues of material fact on both claims. Now, when I'm referring to both claims, I'm referring to what we call in the brief the Cordes claim, and that is DuPont's claim that Medtronic failed to follow the PACRA, the P-A-C-R-A, which was the governing document agreement between Medtronic and DuPont, failed to follow the PACRA insofar as computing royalties on the monies that Medtronic was receiving from Cordes. Cordes was a licensee of Medtronic's under the Levy patent, and Medtronic was receiving very substantial royalties from Cordes. It then had an obligation, which the Superior Court found, that it was obligated to follow the PACRA insofar as those Cordes royalties were concerned. And it did not, and it's not contested that it did not follow the PACRA with regard to that. The second claim I'm referring to is the one that eventually was discovered by Deloitte and set forth in its September 12, 2006 report, and that concerns Medtronic's deduction of 56%, or rather payment on 44%, of the value of these stent systems. So I refer to those as the Cordes claim and the claim based on Medtronic's failure to pay the full amount on its own stent products. Looking at the pertinent case law, which in my view would be the decisions from this court, the Berger case, the Coleman case, the Walmart case, also not from this court, but Justice Jacobs, when Your Honor sat as Chancellor back in 2000, there's a Technicor case that I think is very much on point. Considering the case law, I submit that DuPont was much more reasonably diligent on these facts, and certainly a jury could so find, than the plaintiffs in Walmart, Berger, and Coleman. And what's unusual about this case is that there was, of course, our position, no inquiry notice, no red flag, yet there were two investigations. That's unusual because usually what happens is a plaintiff or a potential plaintiff is put on notice of certain facts and then goes out, maybe hires an investigator, hires an auditor. In the case of Ms. Layton, the leading case on that, goes to the doctor and gets an x-ray and sees that there's something inside her. In this case, DuPont was not put on notice of either claim, yet because of its following of best practices, it had hired PwC in 2000, and then in 2003 it hired Deloitte to conduct investigations. And it hired both of those, two of those big four accounting firms. It wanted to know, did Medtronic owe it any money? Was it correctly computing the royalties under the PACRA? PwC came back and said, they don't owe you any money. And Deloitte comes back several years later and says, they do owe you money. They're taking this 56% deduction. But Deloitte does not discover the basis for the Cordes claim, and that's undisputed. Now, the results of those two investigations create genuine issues of material fact about whether these claims were inherently unknowable, about whether DuPont acted reasonably, and whether, even if it were on inquiry notice, whether DuPont could have discovered the facts. And why do I say that? First of all, the mere fact that neither of these highly sophisticated, specialized accounting firms did not find the basis for the Cordes claim, did not figure out, in the words of Medtronic in its last brief, did not figure out that, in fact, Medtronic was not following the PACRA insofar as the Cordes fees were concerned, that alone raises a genuine issue of material fact about whether any more diligence would have discovered those facts. Focusing on the PwC report, I'd like to point out that at Appendix 1366, Medtronic's counsel conceded to the Superior Court that the PwC report did not identify the issue of the deduction of stents. In other words, the PwC report came out in 2000, did not identify the issue that 6 years later Deloitte figures out, that, oh, Medtronic is only paying on 44%. Counsel for Medtronic also conceded, again at page A1366, that the PwC report didn't say that Medtronic was apportioning stents or taking the stent out. And at page 1488 of the record, Medtronic's counsel conceded that there was, quote, considerable imprecision in language that PwC used in its report. Now, I know that Medtronic argues that two sentences in the second page in the fourth bullet point of that six-page document, using hindsight, should have put DuPont on notice that there was a claim. But when you apply the standard of Coleman, which is clearly and unmistakably, a red flag that clearly and unmistakably would have put a reasonable person in DuPont's position, and then you take that standard and you view it through the prism of the summary judgment standard, which is, could a reasonable jury conclude that there are issues that about DuPont's reasonableness and about whether it would have discovered the facts any sooner than it did or should have been more diligent, that concession that there's imprecision in the language and that the report does not identify this issue, this 56% issue, that alone means that the PwC versus Coleman standard has not been met. The second investigation by Deloitte, looking at Medtronic's brief, its responsive brief, the takeaway from that is that if only DuPont had asked some more questions, the magic questions, the scales would have fallen from its eyes. It would have gotten whatever information it needed. If only these highly sophisticated auditors, PwC and Deloitte, had asked more questions, they would have gotten the responses that were needed to be able to file the claim. And I'd like to call out for the court something that we didn't emphasize in the brief, which I think really shows that the opposite is true. It's an extraordinary document. It appears in the record at A465 to 469. It was authored by Deloitte, and it was sent to Medtronic in July of 2005. And in that document, they catalog this long history of failure to cooperate, failure to provide information, and indeed even providing misinformation, hindering at every step of the way Deloitte's attempt to discover whether or not Medtronic is calculating the royalties correctly. And the chronology of that is extremely important. It's July of 05. Remember that Deloitte began its investigation in, I think it was, the fall of 2003. So it's on the job for almost 2 years, and it has gotten nowhere. Now, ask yourselves whether a jury looking at that document, in addition to the other data points that are in the record, such as the refusal to provide access to DuPont when the audits was being conducted, and I'm referring to Mr. Jarrow's email back to DuPont that says DuPont may not attend any of these sessions and is not entitled to any information. The concession of counsel below that's in our brief that DuPont was not entitled to any more information than was in the royalty reports. And the royalty reports do not show, and that's not contested, they do not show how the royalties were being calculated.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes, Justice Jacobs.
I at least think I understand, you know, the thrust of your arguments relating to the statute of limitations and the misapplication of the summary judgment standard,
yes,
which you've argued so lucidly. But it is the case, is it not, that none of that matters if there isn't a legally cognizable claim to assert in the first place. And as I understand Judge Johnson's opinion, she held, in addition to, you know, besides concluding that the claims were time barred, that there were no claims.
Yes.
And I want to make sure that we have enough time to address that.
Okay. I will address that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, in connection with that, I just want to make sure I understand the fundamental facts. In the balloon stent combined instrument that,
yes,
you know, was inserted into the blood vessels, the balloon part, as I understand it, was clearly a DuPont product. You know, that involved DuPont R&D, DuPont materials, and nobody can test that.
Right.
The stent, as I understand it, was not a DuPont product. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So if the stent had been sold apart from the balloon, there would not, you know, we wouldn't be here. Correct?
That is correct.
So as I gather, and tell me if I have it right or wrong, DuPont's position is because the stent and the balloon were sold as a unit, with the stent, I guess, inserted into the balloon, that for purposes of computing the royalty, the cost of both had to be aggregated and treated as one product, and that would be a DuPont product.
Correct? Yes, Your Honor. It's not, although I wouldn't, with respect, I wouldn't use the word aggregated. I would come at it a little bit differently, but
it was maybe a poor choice of words, but they were sold together and they were fused together, and they were sold as a single instrument for medical purposes.
Yes, medical device. That is our position, sum and substance. Not so much aggregated, though, but we would say, the way I think about this, Your Honor, is I put myself in Medtronic shoes, and I have a product, and we have here what was before the Superior Court, and this is an example of a stent system, and it's in plastic, and I'm Medtronic, and I have this thing, and it's called the S670, and now I have to decide, okay, do I have to pay any royalties on this? I know I've got a number of different royalty agreements because I've got license agreements because there's patents in this space, and so do I have to pay royalties on this, and if so, how much and how do I compute them? It's ready to be sold, and why do I say that? It's because, well, there's going to be a price, right? So I have a price that I know I'm going to sell it at, and I have a price that I know I'm going to sell it at, and I now need to compute royalties. So I look at my PACRA, which is the governing document vis-a-vis DuPont, and I say, okay, I have something called a catheter. And I ask myself, is this a catheter? It's undisputed that this, the S670 and the other sense systems, are catheters. And then I say, okay, this is a medical device. It's designed for insertion into the vessels and channels of the human body. I'm reading from A107 to 108. And so it is a catheter. And then I ask myself, does this medical device utilize, does it as a whole utilize some DuPont technology? And the answer is, the balloon piece does. Now, there's a lot of other pieces in this. We have a diagram. There's a thing called a lure. There are two shafts. There's the balloon. And then the stent is attached to the balloon and to the shaft. So I ask myself, is this a medical device? Is it a catheter? Yes. Does the catheter have some DuPont technology in it? Yes. Then it's a product, capital P, and I have to pay royalties on it.
That's a matter of contract interpretation?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what is the principle that gets you to that conclusion when everyone concedes that if these two, if the balloon and the stent had been sold in separate packages, each for their whatever the proportion of the total price that was charged for the single package. Why? Because they were sold as a single package. Does that compel the contractual interpretation as a matter of law that your side is arguing for?
Okay. It's not so much that it's sold as a single package, but it is one medical device. No more, because that the argument would prove too much. If the argument would be, can we take this apart or were they separately developed, then you'd only pay royalties on the balloon. Yet, and it's in our brief, Medtronic has conceded that they had to pay royalties on the entire product, the entire medical device, the stent system, just that they want to remove the stent out of the equation because they say, well, at some point in time it was sold separately. But there's nothing in the agreement that adds an exception that says, okay, but in the event that the components of this are sometimes sold separately or were sold separately in the past, then you don't have to pay royalties on the selling price of the product. You can take some of those out. And that is, I think, what I'm attempting to do is take what your Honor's interpretation and say, okay, what would an agreement look like that actually provided that? There is no exception here for a medical device where the parts may have been sold separately. If that were the case, the balloon can be sold separately as well. This is my rebuttal time.
It is the case that the contract doesn't, you know, specifically address that fact situation, but it does. You know, central to the contract is the proportioning. You know, the formula for apportioning the royalty between DuPont and non-DuPont products.
But you only apportion if you have something that's a related product. And if you have a product that's a medical device that fits a catheter, you never get to the question of whether it's a related product. And neither.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it?
It is. But when you read the plain language, you ask yourself, I've got this thing. Are these parts of this medical device? I'm selling it for one price, and I need to know, am I paying royalties on this? This is one device. Does it meet the definition of catheter? There's nothing in the language of the definition of catheter or product that allows you to remove it. What they're saying is it would be unfair to not remove it, that there would be a windfall. But that is saying these are not sophisticated parties. They didn't really know what they got into when, in fact, they were highly sophisticated. They negotiated this language. Dr. Foley specifically wanted the definition of catheter to be broad to cover materials that weren't necessarily DuPont materials.
Thank you. I should caution you that you've argued through your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Rob Hochman on behalf of Medtronic Vascular. I'm going to begin with the statute of limitations issue as well, but I do promise I will get to the merits of the contract as well before I conclude. DuPont struggles to make this case seem messy and complicated, but as it arrives here, it's narrow and simple. There's but a single question the Court needs to confront on the statute of limitations. The answer is straightforward, and it resolves all the issues in the case. Mr. Wolfson this morning repeated the argument that there's some kind of difference between the claims as to Cordis and the claims as to Medtronic that's relevant to the statute of limitations, but that's not right. The claim, as you heard him say today, is that Medtronic failed to pay DuPont an appropriate amount of royalties on stent system sales pursuant to the PACRA. Everybody agrees that stent system sales generate royalties for DuPont, and Medtronic is obliged by the PACRA to pay those amounts. And that provision of the PACRA that imposes that obligation is the same whether it's sold by a licensee like Cordis or directly by Medtronic. So the issue in the case is whether DuPont's claim that the PACRA does not permit apportionment of stent system sales at all is time-barred. Was DuPont on notice that there was a difference of opinion about how the PACRA accounts or permits DuPont, Medtronic rather, to account for stent system sales in its calculation of royalties? He talked a little bit about some confusion or some effort to create confusion in the record about how Cordis was paying Medtronic, but as you can see, that doesn't matter because the PACRA obligation is what determines how Medtronic pays DuPont. Even if there were some fact questions about how Cordis was paying Medtronic, it wouldn't make a difference, and it doesn't make a difference. So we can turn to why the inquiry notice standard is readily satisfied here, and why the answer to this single dispositive question is straightforward. We discuss a variety of materials in our brief, with which I'm sure you're familiar. I'm going to focus today on the PwC report, and I want to focus on that because I think it drives right through the heart of the arguments that DuPont has been making in its briefs and again here today. If you'd like to follow along, the relevant paragraph was reproduced in the Superior Court's opinion. It's in the addendum, page 21 to 22, addendum to the brief. It's also at A380 in the record. And what you have to do is you have to bear in mind the legal standard here. It's an objective standard. That's what inquiry notice is. It's an objective standard, and the law requires that DuPont, if it's put on notice such that there's reasonable suspicion that its rights have been violated, it has to take action. It has to be reasonably attentive to its rights. And the premise of this entire case at this point is that DuPont's rights, to which it needs to be reasonably attentive, is the right to receive royalty payments on the unapportioned selling price of stent systems. With that in mind, we turn to what the PwC report says, which Mr. Wolfson today poo-pooed as just a couple of lines in bullet points. Well, when you hire an auditor, and the purpose that you hire the auditor is to ensure that you're being adequately compensated under a contract, and you're a sophisticated party like DuPont, you better pay attention to everything the auditor says. You can't just treat a couple of sentences as not all that important. And what they say is they highlight the apportionment provision of the PACRA. They quote it, and they say, this is being used. And it says, we note that Medtronic AVE applies this provision to the selling price of stent products. It goes on. Furthermore, the factor Medtronic's AVE applies to the selling price of the stents is reasonable. So there's apportionment being applied to stent products, or a factor of apportionment is being applied to the stents. The clock is running as soon as they receive this, Your Honor. And you don't have to go further. This standing alone is sufficient.
Your point is, if DuPont is currently arguing they should have gotten a percentage based on the full price, they were on notice from this Price Waterhouse report that it was being apportioned.
That's correct, Your Honor. Absolutely. And it's right there. And, look, and the only thing they have to say about this, is, well, they might have understood it to mean something different from what it says. But because maybe this refers to invoices, and sometimes stent products, stent systems were sold on invoices with things like guide wires and introducers. And even though they're separately priced, well, it's all a single invoice. But that's not what it says. And
do you agree that the standard for inquiry notice is clearly and unmistakably put on notice?
I think that there's some differences in language in the cases, Your Honor.
Well, then tell us what the standard is from your perspective.
Yeah, from my perspective, I think that you have to take action when suspicion is reasonable, when you have enough information to believe, and this is out of the Pomeranz case, which they cite as well, which refers to Coleman. Coleman has the clearly and unmistakably language and the red flags language, but that's dealing in a specific context of audit malpractice, where you know the language of red flags and clear and unmistakable evidence goes to the core of the claim itself. Here, what you have are two sophisticated parties in an arm's-length transaction, and one of them is concerned at the time that they hire, so concerned, in fact, that they hire an auditor. And they're willing to bear that burden to go out.
Let's say with your theory that this may be simpler than it first appears. And there's no dispute that DuPont was getting checks. And ostensibly, it was what was computed to be their fair share. And at some point, DuPont said, well, okay, you sent us a check, hypothetically, for $100,000. How did you compute that? Your point is that no matter how you look at it, the answer you see in the Price Waterhouse report is, well, we apportioned it fairly. And if DuPont really thought there should have been no apportionment, that's when it should have said, well, what percentage, instead of saying what percentage did you use or how did you get to 100,000, it should have said, wait a minute, you shouldn't be apportioning this at all.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that's interesting is Mr. Wolfson emphasized that it wasn't until Deloitte had done its audit that they figured out how much the apportionment was. But that doesn't matter from the point of view of the statute of limitations.
The fact that they later had a quantifiable number of 56% didn't matter, because if there was any proportionment at all at any percentage, that's what they should have been concerned about.
And that's what a person reasonably attentive to DuPont's own understanding of its rights would take action. That's how I would articulate the standard, Your Honor. You have to be reasonably attentive to your rights. What happened is PwC actually agreed with us. PwC thought we were right. That's why they didn't make a big stink about this. They just said, oh, apportionment seems appropriate, and the factor, Medtronic, applies to the selling price of the stents, not to guide wires and introducers, not to anything else. The stents appears reasonable. And it would completely undermine the purpose of statutes of limitations, which is to give people the opportunity to rest assured that claims are going to be raised in a timely fashion. If someone could hire an auditor to protect their interests, specifically to protect their interests, get a statement like this, and basically pay it no mind. And indeed, the evidence, as we cite, is actually a little bit stronger than that, because what we know from what Mr. Bickelmeyer is writing to his colleagues at DuPont during and after this audit confirms that this message got through and confirms that DuPont understood what was going on. He talked about the current practice under the PACRA. He talked about, and he described, the apportionment calculation with respect to stent systems. In his emails after receiving royalties, he refers to the nylon balloon part of the stent system as generating royalties to DuPont. So the evidence here is overwhelming and powerful, and the Superior Court was correct to say that they were on inquiry notice, and you need go no further than the PwC report. Of course, we do have more. There is the context it's in. I just talked about the Bickelmeyer evidence, and there's also the fact that prior to that audit, there were discussions about how to calculate apportionment. Some, and freely admit. We freely admit there was an effort to change the method of the apportionment calculation, but there was never discussions about whether apportionment was appropriate.
So I gather your point is that, you know, if the standard is clear and unmistakable, then what was stated in the PwC report was clear and unmistakable.
Even if you were to adopt that as the standard, I certainly would argue, and I'm very comfortable arguing, that what PwC said was clear and unmistakable.
So clear and unmistakable that reasonable persons couldn't differ over what it was communicating.
That's right, Your Honor, because if you look at it and you try to construe it in the way that DuPont is suggesting, you have to just do violence to it. What we know is that PwC looked into this issue. They were given. I don't want to leave one thing hanging because Mr. Wolfson also mentioned that there was reason to believe that even if they did take further action, they'd be stymied because there was problems and difficulties later on after the relationship was over, and DuPont hired Deloitte to come in and do a subsequent audit, which was very intrusive and very disruptive to Medtronic.
Did you have any different reaction to the respective audits, the first and then the Deloitte second audit?
I think it's fair to say that the evidence supports a more contentious relationship with the early on, that there was hesitance. There was concern that this was disruptive to our business by the time the Deloitte audit rolls around. But the reason why I started with the PwC audit and the reason why I said this strikes through the heart of everything is there's no evidence of that at all. There's no reason to believe. First of all, there's no confidentiality agreement. So PwC is free to share what they will with DuPont. Secondly, Mr. Swan testified, the auditor for PwC, that he can recall no interruption or disruption in his ability to conduct his business. We know they looked into this in detail. They examined the documents with respect to the calculations.
Well, just in case we take old cases off the shelf that says this court doesn't favor statute of limitations, you have less than half your time left. Would you care to address the claims on the merits?
Yeah, sure, and I'll be brief about that, Your Honor. The answer to the question about this contract, the construction of the contract, really turns on the what's left to do, what's left for the related products provision to do. It's clear that the parties, and these are sophisticated parties, no doubt about that, they contemplated that things might be sold in tandem, they might be put together, and that there would be some apportionment necessary. If you're just talking about putting things on an invoice with separate prices, you don't need to apportion anything. You just take out the things, you just drop them off. And in fact, we know from the PwC report that there were things that were just excluded from royalty calculations altogether. That comes later in the report.
So the related product definition and the definition of
selling price.
Yeah, and its role in the formula for apportionment are designed to capture situations like this where DuPont products and non-DuPont products are sold together in a single package or
single
price.
That's right. That's exactly right. The only thing, you wouldn't need a definition of related products and you wouldn't need an apportionment formula if you had totally separate products sold together. You would just have products that generate royalties, and you could look at the revenue, you could look at the selling price and try to determine the manufacturing price there and just ignore everything else. You need a calculation when you have what you might call a blend, when you blend these things together. And the historical fact, it would be strange indeed, Your Honor, if Medtronic were, by virtue of this contract, somehow incentivized to keep selling these products separately, as was done originally, rather than, for the convenience of doctors, simply put them together, especially when that provision is sitting there waiting to be invoked in any case. And because you don't want to leave contracts, obviously important contract provisions, without anything to do, it's our position that this is exactly the sort of situation that the apportionment provision of selling price and the related products provision contemplated, and it applies perfectly.
But that stems entirely from the language of the contract. There's no drafting history. There's no custom and practice in the industry.
There doesn't.
At all.
No, that's straight out of the contract, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Your point is, if you sent five different things from people that weren't the same manufacturers and said, put them together yourself, it would be clear. But if you're going to assemble them and send them off as a unit, it makes sense to, and the contract provides for proration.
That's what the contract was contemplating. That's our position, that they that these two parts, the related products provision and the apportionment provision of selling price, contemplated just that. And it fits perfectly. And for those reasons, Your Honor, we respect the request, unless there are further questions, that you affirm the judgment of the Superior Court.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
We have in mind the motion to strike and the additional information sent to us. We'll consider that in the course of our deliberations. Thank you, Counsel, for your assistance today. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.